Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome to episode 470 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Nathan Fenton Keys, and I'm Neff Seguin. And while Tuesday's 3-1 loss against Real Valladolid didn't give us much to talk about, all the news that has happened since then has given us more than enough to talk about. I think, Emil, the only two, we'll say, talking points from that Real Valladolid match to me were Pablo Torre, good, and Eric Garcia, very, 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 very bad. I mean, the team as a whole wasn't great, and they lost 3-1. But, you know, I feel like you were at the parade, or at least it went by your house. So you know that there was an emotional drop-off that was coming. Fortunately, it happened both Real Sociedad and Real Valladolid.
Exactly. And then, I mean, if you look, too, the Barça Femení, who hadn't lost, I believe, a home game on Catalan soil, or a home game in something like 4 years. They had, you know, they'd won about 70 consecutive league matches until a couple of weeks ago. They came out and lost their final game of the season too. I just think there was such a, the emotional outpouring was really something to see during that parade. And I feel like, you know, there was a little bit of mission accomplished on both people, you know, both teams' parts. Barca doesn't have anything to play for, and, you know, didn't have anything to play for in these last 3-4 games. And at that point, Barca Femini still had, you know, 2.5 weeks to prepare for the Champions League final. I think there's a little bit of a hangover. I mean, in some cases there might be literal hangovers, but just also the emotional hangover.
Yeah, I said this in the five headlines that Lewandowski is playing to the Pichichi. Ter Stegen was playing, unfortunately, probably he's playing to that clean sheet. He still technically is, but now he can just tie. He cannot actually hold the record, I believe, or maybe he can get the record by one, but he'd have to get a clean sheet in both those. But either way. So Ter Stegen was fighting for that record that seems to now be lost because they keep shipping goals in the last 3 games, as well as we mentioned too. Again, players like a Pablo Torre fighting, I think, him alone, basically fighting for his life next season. In the case, as I mentioned, of Ansu and of Ferran Torres and even Rafinha, Kessié, I think those are players that I know that rumors come out every day, but I feel like their futures are pretty much already, say, set in stone. That's why I've said a billion times, and we'll talk about it later in the show about transfer stuff, that I've felt now for about 3 months that Ansu is going to be leaving the club. I felt it. It's in the pit of my stomach. And just for a lot of different reasons, I think the club is going to give up on him, regardless of what happens in the transfer window. I think, not even give up, but I think they're going to sell him to try to do other things. I just think that's what's going to happen. And especially, again, with other players. Kessié, I think, is either knows he's gone or knows he's staying, and I think that's done and dusted. Mm-hmm. Again, Pablo Torre would be the only example of a player that next season, if when the musical chairs does kind of play out, if Barcelona need a high interior, are they going to keep him around? Are they going to try to loan him out? Or are they going to sell him for, you know, 2 cents on the dollar?
Well, so what's interesting is I think what you said about the situation that Pablo Torre was in and his maybe his motivations coming into this game and how they are different in terms of uncertainty around where he will be and what position he'll be in. I mean, I think there's just even a simpler way is all of these other guys who were, you know, kind of central to this league title, the first one in 4 years. I keep going back to this feeling. I mean, I feel like this was a game without stakes, really. You know what I mean? For most of these guys. Because even if someone is going to be leaving the club, whether it's Ansu, whether it's Ferran Torres, whomever, like these last two games of the season, it's highly unlikely that even anything you do in one of these games right. with the league title already sealed is going to dramatically, you know, the book is already out on you as a player. Teams that want you will pay for you or they won't. And so, yeah, I think it's just been a little bit of that. I think they kind of sleepwalked through the performance, frankly. I mean, it was just, you know, I mean, like I said, I haven't seen the game in its entirety. I saw like a 5-minute highlight clip and I've read a couple of post-game post-mortems. And it really just seemed like it's kind of mission accomplished because there's not a Copa del Rey final. There's not a Champions League final or anything. So this is just kind of, you know, you're putting in FaceTime at the office until it's time to go on vacation.
Yeah, I would say most players look, not say disinterested, but yeah, Real Valladolid were fighting for something. And I think, again, the credit does go to Real Valladolid for saying, hey, we're trying to avoid relegation. And this all matters to us here at home. And for Barcelona, as I had said, Pablo Torre was good in the game. I thought even he started slow. His connections with De Jong and Valde and Gabi just really weren't there. It didn't look clean. It didn't look what it needed to be. But then by about the 25th minute, he and De Jong kind of found that game. And the midfield looked a little more settled. I think everybody looked a lot better. The only really player that we can get on and heap on is, I think people always get mad when I don't mention when Eric Garcia stinks. And he not only stunk, but he very greatly stunk, like to the point where I don't think that match decides whether or not he's leaving or not. But it's another example of him as a pivot may not even be good enough for that backup spot. I mean, and that's why if Arsenal are going for, we're going to talk about the pivots later, but that's why I almost disqualify him from even beginning that conversation where I think he is potentially the fifth center back next season, but they already re-signed Marcos Alonso. And if you're asking Kool-Aids with their gun to the head, would they take Marcos Alonso or Eric Garcia? Both of them are probably going to pull the trigger on you before you can get the gun out of their hand. But that said, I think even at this juncture, maybe people will take Alonso. As I said, I would take Eric Garcia for that as your fifth center back. But again, he also has performances like that where there is nothing to defend. There is nothing qualifying about him, especially as a pivot. Just defensively, it was a mess. But again, the rest of the team wasn't up to it. And I think, that's all I have to say from Real Valladolid. Because the very next day, the big news that dropped, and I had to wait a few days, kind of let it soak in. And I like this, too, to let it soak in. We all saw that Jordi Alba, the reason why he was so quiet is because he did it on his own terms. He announced that he's leaving Barcelona. It was not the club, let's say, pushing him out like they tried to last year where they started negotiating with Inter Milan. And Inter Milan was like, does he want to come? And then Jordi Alba was like, no, I don't want to go. And it was like, well, I guess we're going to hang the phone up now, even though, you know, we're really working on this deal. And now this, on his own, it seems like with his kids and with everybody else that it's time for him to go. It's probably related somewhere with Busquets. I think there is some kind of connection between the two of them leaving at the same time. But more importantly, for the Jordi Alba news from a Barcelona sense, at least, because there are basically two things we have to do, Emil. We have to wax poetic about Jordi Alba. We have to give him some compliments. And then we also have to talk about what this means for Barcelona. So let's actually start with that one there, because he is giving up and forgiving a large part of his remaining salary next season. That is reportedly waiving 50% of his deferred salary. Remember, if salary numbers are to be believed, his 20.5 this season was only going to go up. So he made about 1/8 of the total salary for the team this season. So losing what would have been close to next season, 1/6 of the total salary of your books on just Jordi Alba, getting rid of 1/6 of your salary in one fell swoop like that, because he has permanent contact. Right. That is beyond tremendous. Like I keep saying this, that like I even had the question, two shows ago, was who is the transfer domino, or what needs to happen for something to change? And I don't want to use this hyperbole, but the club, I mean, I would believe that the club did not have it in their viability plan for La Liga that they were going to get this done. And that's why you will very quickly in the next few days see that Barcelona will likely have a 1-to-1 now, because Jordi Alba leaving was the huge difference of that. Yeah. Even I know Frankie de Jong really could be the biggest domino if he decides to extend his contract over X number of years and diversify his number. But everybody else now seems to be under some kind of reasonable salary structure. Another example, but now Jordi Alba leaving, as I said, I'll throw it to you, because again, that is just number wise, just beyond, I think, what Barcelona could have dreamed of.
That is, it really is huge. And I don't know if he did it to help the club or what, but it is a massive help to the club. And I think what I was thinking about is, you were speaking about Frankie de Jong being the last, you know, the legacy mega contract. And I know, I mean, he's getting just such astronomical money that it would be virtually impossible to be value for money at the salary that he gets. But even that being said, I think he's an overpaid, excellent midfielder, and you can at least swallow that and extend his contract because he's at least in prime age, you know? So you might be overpaying, but at least you're overpaying for the prime years of an excellent player's career.
Right.
And rather than watching Jordi Alba just kind of taper off and, you know.
He's 34.
Coast into the sunset. I mean, he's. So if you're going to pay the big bucks, at the very least, you know, it might be some degree of overpay, but at least you're paying a star midfielder who's still in his 20s.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, I mean, I think just like I said with Busquets, the same thing with Alba. There are a large swath of the fan base that especially skews younger that say that he left too late. That Jordi Alba, you know, once Liverpool happened, they had to extradite him, and his time was over once Liverpool happened, right? Because Jordi Alba's whole career for, again, a generation that lives online is going to be remembered from a meme instead of over 450 appearances he made, the connections with Messi that he had over the years.
Like the mind meld that he had,
Yeah, winning 6 league titles, 5 Copa del Reyes, 1 Champions League, 458 total appearances, 99 assists in his time, scored a bunch of goals. Seems like so many bangers, so many good golazos, and not even, they weren't necessarily in big moments, but he did have game winners as well. And so Jordi Alba, that's funny because in our minds, I think there, again, a swath of the fan base will say, I only choose to remember the bad memories about him. But then in the same breath, Kool-Aid have to ask, is he the best left back in Barcelona's history? And that's a fair question. And on Twitter, I upset many of our other famous guests on this show that they come on at different times because, again, my top 75 list came out again. And I know people get annoyed by that. But listen, I very rarely, as you know, Emil, get myself in trouble by saying anything. And nothing people matter than ranking players and lists and things that can be debated. So let me just stir the pot a little bit. That's the only way I stir the pot, by making lists. It's very boring. But anyway, is Jordi Alba a Barcelona legend? As I have all these legends behind me always. Would I put Jordi Alba on this poster, on this list, right? Those are questions I ask. Well, my question first is, how do you define a legend? Is that a top 25 player? But, you know, for me, I think Barcelona legends with the hundreds of players that have played for the club, I felt like 75 is a fair list where I'm at right now. So I have Alba at 47 behind. And the only reason I say this is I say, what kind of players? It's not a matter of like an exact ranking, right? Almost do it in tiers, like, right? Where it's just like, this is a group of the absolute, like, well, there's Messi above, but then the next group is Xavi, Iniesta, Cruyff, and, you know, and then Ronaldinho, or maybe just those three.
And then, you know, and then there's Kubala and Ronaldinho, the dream team and all those guys,
Right. And then you kind of go down your tiers, then you have the likes of, we'll say, like, Pique and I don't know some of the other greats of the same time period. I'm being almost like looking behind me as I'm doing this, but like, or Pique and Luis Suarez are there together, right? Like they're legends of a certain time, and they're comparable to Koeman actually. like where Kuma's a little bit above them, but it's a similar tier. You get the idea.
Can I kind of, so I've been thinking about this as you were talking, and I'm trying to think of my knee jerk, almost my vibes based assessment of Jordi Alba's legacy. And I mean, look, I think he's undoubtedly the most accomplished, just as far as, you know, the accolades and the team success and everything. I think he's the most accomplished left back in club history. And if he's off the top of my head, I can't think of who the sort of the couple stiffest competitors would be. But
I did the work for you. So what I was going to say is I put Alba for how important he was to the club, for even the ups and downs, I take him out of the count. Yeah. I have in the same kind of category as Jose Ramon Alexanco from the late 80s. Didn't do a lot of winning. Club captain. Luis Enrique, who was an important forward. I mean, this is a player.
Yes.
Luis Enrique, player, was an important forward, scored some big goals, had some big moments. And then one of the old goalkeepers from the 20s, Ferenc Plotko, just kind of like a legacy kind of for him. And then Philip Kökú, which was also, I believe he was one of the fastest to get the captain's armband in club history. It was also because the team stuck at the time in the late 90s. Like,
that was the Van Gaal years, right?
Yeah. But I think two of the better contemporaries, I should say, for Jordi Alba is Rakitic and De Gea Steyn. Two players that won trophies.
Okay, yeah.
Were never, you know, they were never the most essential or important players in those teams, but they were important role players, and you almost devalue how significant they were. How many times that managers who were winning trophies put them on their team sheets as the first name, or not the first name, but the first name at that spot, and it was unparalleled. So my list, as far as left backs go, Juan Segura, who people heard me say before, Juan Segura, the great captain of the 50s, he did play as a left center back, but a left back. So technically, he's a left back, but I don't want to get into a whole like inverting the pyramid thing and tell you how fullbacks didn't exist until like the late 80s, 90s.
Basically, yeah.
Like fullbacks until the 90s were not what we consider them to be. So Jordi Alba.
I'm actually rereading Inverting the Pyramid as we speak. So
So like Juan Segura is technically the first left back, or to say great left back, he won those trophies back in the 50s and the 60s. He played. I mean, he's a captain, played a ton. Like so I have him at 37 as a player. Alba is at 47, and then Sergi Bergwijn, the left back of the Dream Team, I have at 53, and then Eric Abidal, I have at 69, just because he only made 125 appearances. He didn't play that much. But again, obviously, if I'm, you know, when you go back to my favorite version of FC Barcelona, Eric Abidal is a left.
Exactly.
So again, and when it comes to 47, 53, and 69, we are splitting hairs. Yes. But I think that is the category. It's Alba, it's Sergi, it's Abidal, and that's the top three. And then the drop off when it comes to left back. I mean, now you're talking about like Maxwell. That is the step, the jump down at left back. So yes, I think there is a firm argument if we count Segura as a center back, that Jordi Alba is the most accomplished. That is, I think, undisputed, but that he might be the best.
Just
left
the
back.
Best, yeah. You know what I was thinking? So it's time for my obligatory cross sport and, you know, namely NBA comparison is the legacy of Jordi Alba. He almost reminds me of someone that would be, you know, he's like your ultra elite role player, you know, maybe almost like Draymond Green-esque, where he wouldn't, like, he'll make for... In American sports, he would make for very annoying Hall of Fame conversations. And because people...
what about like a Michael Cooper?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. That's what I mean. Like, and you know, as a Laker fan, I love him. But, you know, it's those... I think he would make for very polarizing and annoying Hall of Fame conversations where some people would say that, you know, this guy, like on talent alone, he has no business being in the Hall of Fame. And others would do count the rings and all that. And but I think it's really interesting. But... he was absolutely indisposable to, like, he's almost like a better Derek Fisher.
Yeah.
You know, like, because Fisher was around for all five of the rings and super, super important. And if he was just a little bit better, there would be Hall of Fame buzz around him. And Jordi Alba strikes me as that kind of guy. He played for some of the best teams, you know, and with these incredible teammates, but he was a worthy member of that cast at his best. He might not have been the most talented or, you know, the most famous or the most prolific, but he was an excellent player for a while. You know, I mean, how many years was it?
Yeah. And I think that the frustrating thing again with his legacy is that, as I say, like with Busquets, his consistency is what made him so, so special because he was so elite for so long. And Alba is where that debate, I kind of go sideways because he, when his drops and his bad moments, his bad moments, as I said, they were so memeable from the last 10 years.
Oh, they're catastrophic. Like when it goes wrong, it goes completely wrong.
Right. And I think for those who are never going to give him his flowers, never going to give him his respect, that is what they're going to hang their hat on. They say that I cannot possibly compliment this man because of how low his lows were. Because it's true. Like, his lows were so much lower than Eric Abidal's. So if you're just judging them on what their highs were and what their baseline performance was, then, yeah, again, you have an argument that Abidal was just consistently, every game you knew what you were going to get out of him, as opposed to Albo, who in the biggest moments...
Moments. Like that murderer's row of Champions League flameouts, you know, Roma, Liverpool, pick a Bayern, you know, like just...
But I've never understood the crying against Liverpool thing. I mean, and again, we talk about this.
Oh, I don't think it's that big a deal, you know. But it's
a matter of, like, I mean, you want players who play with passion. You want players to play for your team, and you want them to care. And then if they don't care in the proper way, or they aren't caring at the right time, or like nobody knows. Like, no one ever knows what that emotional reaction was in response to. And so, like.
Look, and honestly, like in that big moment, there might be some players who would cry in that moment. And in that moment, if he made the play to, you know, if after crying and, you know, everyone's seeing that and everything, if a play is made and the tie is saved and you're off to the final of the Champions League, that crying gets, you know, lionized. It's
beyond forgotten. If Ousmane Dembélé finishes on the counterattack.
Yeah, yeah.
If he finishes that goal
in the first leg,
we'll never speak about Jordi Alba, right? And so, it's true, absolutely. That unfortunately for him, he is the victim of the circumstance that one moment can absolutely change your legacy.
If they survive that tie, his crying is sort of, it's the stuff of legend. It's, you know, like a team legend wearing his heart on his sleeve in a big moment.
Yep. Yeah. So, and I think not to say why he would be a legend or not, but he obviously does have a story that is intertwined and connected to the club and will be forever. He first joined Barca's academy in 1998, but left in 2005, spending time with both Cornea and Valencia before returning to Barcelona in 2012. So he was gone for about 7 years there in a transfer worth 14 million euros. And very much like Rakitic, I'll say it again, that 14 million euros at the time in 2012 when he was bought winds up being really, 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 really good value. Now, they also paid him, as we've said many times, a very hefty salary. So, while the transfer number was fair, the salary, I mean, he was, again, it's funny that in
it's
one breath,
comfortably I comfortably into the eight figures.
Well, I was going to say, in one breath, I call him a legend, and the other breath, I say, but was he actually overpaid, right? Like, this is a top 50 player, in my opinion, but also he might have been overpaid because of just how much that Bartomeu and company paid him while he was at the club. Incredible.
Look, it was similar to the thing, remember, and sorry, this will be my last NBA reference, but remember that last 2 year contract that Kobe got with the Lakers? And you know, every NBA head was like, oh my God, I can't believe the Lakers are overpaying. Look, in a situation like that, the team wasn't going to be any better. And European football doesn't work like the NBA. Like you're not relying on draft classes and things like that.
Yeah, there's also no legacy thank yous. Like, I mean, that's the whole thing about the Messi thing even. There's no like saying thank you to a player is way too costly. Like, you cannot fit that salary structure if you're going to try to contend for championships. You can't say, I mean, the only example maybe is Scott Carson, the third goalkeeper for Man City. So, yes, you could keep a third goalkeeper who's like a great guy until he's 40, and that's not a big deal, but you cannot use a spot on an outfield player with salary.
Well, also, I mean, just for that price, you know, like if he was making, you know, $5 million a year, you're like, okay, fine. That's squad depth. But like, you know, at your second highest salary or second, third, whatever it is, that's tough.
Yeah. I mean, this year he was fourth, tied with Lewandowski behind just Anthony Young. Yep. So anyway, Mallorca is the final home game for Busquets and Alba. And apparently someone else, but I think that was just Gerard Romero getting a few things right and then taking liberties. And then they immediately said it wasn't Sergio Roberto. But a reminder too, not to get off on Sergio Roberto here, but he in the same in a different way, I should say, for Busquets and Alba. Again, they're 34 years old. Mm. They know that they're entering the twilight of their career. While he is hurt all the time, Roberto is still 3 years younger and does, with this renewal, make a very small and now a reasonable number next season.
Yeah.
Like, so there is really no reason for Roberto at 31 to admit the way that Busquets and Alba have admitted. As I said, they have left, if anything, at the right time. Yeah. Where Busquets, I could see him having, and I said it, having a lot of use next year in the same respect. If I'm asking, if you want me to have 35-year-old Alba next season as a backup to Balde or to Marcus Alonso, I'm taking Alba because of the contributions he made as a backup this year. And that's why Alba is also leading, because he believes he still has a lot left to give, maybe at the highest level, or maybe he's going to make a lot of money in Saudi Arabia. But either way, the credit to Alba, because not say unlike Busquets, but Alba watched Balde come up, take his spot, took it in stride. And if anything, for as ornery and, again, the squirrel that he is, like for as frustrating as it seems like his character was and how he seemed to always poke the bear and, you know, get the yellows and have this mercurial personality on the field, the way that the Messi responses and the way his teammates have responded to him, the way that the club has responded to him, and even the way, again, that he basically stayed out of public eye this year as Balde took his spot, he has left the club in the best way possible for the player that we kind of expected. Like, there was a way that Alba, again, like, because of what we know of him on the field, didn't leave the right way, but he is more than left the right way. You know, it is kind of,
it was a very impressive, you know, you can tell that he's, I don't know anything about his off-pitch personality, but it suggests to me that he has a high degree of self-awareness and he has a particular standard that, you know, despite what everyone's screaming online every time he made a mistake. And look, I mean, I'm not going to pretend I was the biggest Jordi Alba fan all the time, but he kept playing till the end. He has an understanding of where he is, you know, as a player and where his game is. And, you know, there might be greener pastures. I mean, it might just be, it's unpleasant to stick around here and you go get the last payday, like you said, in Saudi Arabia or Qatar or wherever it is. But
yeah. I mean, that payday would be way, way more. That's why I do think this is linked to, like, Busquets, because, again, the money he would have made at Barcelona is actually more than he would have made anywhere else next season but Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Easily, because he cannot make that much.
But, I mean, all in all, I think, you know, an excellent career. I think he's in that tier of the Michael Cooper tier, sort of in the hierarchy of a club with a massive and star-studded history.
Yeah, and one of the last things I will say about Alba is that over the course of the last 6 years, watching every single match, when I say the phrase second gear Alba, mm-hmm. I'm going to try to almost keep saying that, because I can tell you that there is no player at FC Barcelona in the last 6 years that, when we'll say the stakes are lower, yeah, when they're playing Ibiza in the first round of Copa del Rey, there is no player who better epitomize the idea of second gear than Jordi Alba, because I could tell from the first 5 minutes how hard the team was going to try, yeah, based on how hard Jordi Alba was trying, or even how many mistakes he was making. Because again, when he tried at the top of his game, when he was willing to run,
yeah,
he's a top three. I mean, what was Marcelo and who else,
yeah,
from attacking fullbacks on the left side over the last 10 years, right? Like, that is a very short list with him on it. And he was a top three to five attacking fullback,
yeah,
over the last 10 years. I mean, without question. So again, when he wanted to,
yeah,
to run and get forward and whatever, he did. And so second gear Alba is a real thing.
Oh, I absolutely believe it. Look, not that I'm not doing the whole thing like, oh, these guys just look at it as a job, but you know, after a decade or, you know, decade and a half, like, it is a job. You learn how to manage the emotional and physical toll of your work after doing it for, yeah, so long. And sometimes you probably look and you're like, yeah, you know, we might even be able to win this in second gear, but even if we lose it, it's not really the end of the world. Like, you know, we'll bounce back.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, though, that same campaign, I think back, I think the game that I most remember him with is a Granada, a Copa del Rey comeback from, I believe, 2 years ago, when he was a part of him and Piqué, yep, just kind of, you know, yeah, push them back, yep, to where they needed to be. And yeah, I just remember those moments, too, because, yeah, then he had that flip, that switch, rather, that he would flip. And speaking of Piqué as well, now three of the four captains from the start of the, yeah, season are out. Piqué, Alba, Busquets. And I know that, again, people want to say goodbye to Roberto. And it seems like next year's captains basically pick themselves. Roberto, Ter Stegen, and then it sounds like Lewandowski and Araujo, yeah, are shopping picks.
Yep.
If Messi returns, it's easy. Messi over Araujo. So if Messi returns, yeah, it'll be Roberto, Ter Stegen, Messi as the one, and then Lewandowski. And then if not Messi returning, then it sounds like it'll be Roberto, Ter Stegen, Araujo, and Lewandowski. But I could also see De Jong instead of Araujo based on longevity.
Can I give you kind of a hot take?
Yeah, go ahead.
If Messi comes back, I take it from Lewandowski, not Araujo.
You prefer Lewandowski over
Araujo? No. I would give Lewandowski's captainship to, you know, I would basically, of the four captains, I would take Lewandowski out and not Araujo.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that's that hard to take. I think people listening and people who watch every day, like, they understand the importance that Araujo has. I think the only thing that's quote unquote disqualifying for him is just his age, which I don't know. It's like, if you can play a 17-year-old, because if he's old enough, he's good enough. Then I'd say the same thing with a leadership position. If he's much of a leader, then he's older.
And the sense he gives off, the feeling that he gives off is, you know, his health permitting, he doesn't strike me. He's not a volatile player. Like, if he's healthy, he's going to be this rock on the back line for, I don't know, a decade, arguably as long as he wants, you know, if his body holds up. So it's the kind of player that you would be willing to kind of hit your wagon to and kind of bestow captaincy upon.
Yeah, I mean, and just for the aesthetics of it, I can tell you that looking at, if it is Roberto number one captain next year, if I'm Ter Stegen, I'm like, okay, I'm basically Barcelona's captain, because on the field, Ter Stegen would likely be wearing the armband, like, what, 75% of the time? I mean, because I can't imagine Roberto's going to get more minutes next season, which transitions us perfectly to that right-back, center-back spot. Now, Koundé has come out, and Koundé has said, I'm not going anywhere. This got out of control. The weird thing about this, and I find this to be a weird story, though, because there was a number. It was 80 to 90 million. The club was not willing to sell him unless it was that number, 80 to 90, where they could immediately reinvest. They could immediately bring in Juan Foyt. That would be the name that would immediately come in as a center back slash right back combination player. And it does appear that Real Sociedad is getting the last Champions League spot over Real, which, thanks to their Barca win, maybe that's some 4D chess by Barcelona. Maybe they lost Rabbi Lee just to get Juan Foyt. He is still under contract, so Villarreal doesn't have to sell. But Xavi wants Foyt as a defensive ball-playing right back, and he can also cover at center back. And I think it's still fair for the club to be going for Foyt, even though Koundé wants to play center back, and Xavi would have to problem-solve and figure out a way to rotate everybody and hope that nobody, you know, gets too frustrated next season. But I don't know, the weird part of that story was that clearly, it was a clear thing because of Alemany's comments about handling internal things internally when it came to the Koundé stuff. Like, he didn't, like, completely disparage it. He didn't throw it away. And it took, 48 hours or 96 hours or something for Koundé to put that story to rest. So it's almost as if everybody went through the motions of saying, how possible is it for Koundé to leave? And then at some juncture, I think there came an agreement between the club and the player immediately to say, okay, I think we're just going to keep things the way they are.
Yeah, and look, I don't know what exactly was behind, you know, what happens behind closed doors. And the rumors came out, and because more often than not, you would think that as a welcome change, I don't want to speculate too much. But it is curious. I would be very interested to know the thought process that went into the last couple of days between the rumors and Koundé's sort of recommitment to the club.
Yeah, I mean, I with Inigo Martinez likely being the first to arrive this summer, then Ronald Araujo, Anders Christensen, and then the shells of Marcos Alonso and Eric Garcia, the club may have to live with that for just next season of Koundé. But lastly, I think the thing I want to end the show by talking about is something that we've been talking about now for a year, that I have YouTube videos on, that I've had names thrown at you for the last, 2 years or more, about which player should come in to be the understudy for Busquets. Now, who's going to come in as a pivot? The club is going to bring in pivots. And now there seems to be an official list of the ones that, the clock has struck midnight. Busquets is actually leaving. So it's time for the club to go out and get a pivot. I might even do a YouTube video on this, a deeper dive on all these players. But again, the news changes so fast and players are put on this list and taken off this list. But it seems like as of this week, here's the list for you. Martin Zubimendi. We already talked about it. I'm not going to do it again. 60 million euro release clause. He said no. Continue. So I don't know what's going to happen with that one, but he is Xavi's pick. That is the number one option. There is no secrets here. The cards are laid completely on the table. 60 million is the number. Do Barca have 60 million to pay his release clause? And even if they do, is he willing to say yes if it's with his boyhood club in the Champions League? Who knows? At this point, the answer has been no. And again, until Barca does pay that release clause, we don't know if he's going to change the answer to yes. But at this juncture, the answer would be no. So not say I would throw him out, but there's reasons why he's still on the table and the number one. I just can't tell if that's the hubris of FC Barcelona. All right, the next one is Guido Rodriguez, 29-year-old Real Betis midfielder, more of a destroyer type, World Cup winner. He's not my cup of tea, but if you're bringing back Messi, there is definitely some connectivity that could be useful. Mm-hmm. And he has Messi's, we'll say, trust, and that is, again, very important teams with Messi in it. Next one is Arthur Vermeeren. I want to say I'm saying that right, but I spent an hour watching him as much of him as I could, but because I couldn't even watch actual game action, I didn't even know how to pronounce his name properly because, again, I'm just watching those terrible, terrible, like, EDM and tech beats. Highlights. So I don't have anything to report because, again, I just saw highlights. It seems like he does see the field well for an 18-year-old, and he has this nice little lofted ball into the box that at least works in the Belgian first division. It is something he will definitely have in his bag as he continues to improve, sure. But, again, like, when it comes to the pivot, you have to watch entire game. You have to watch multiple games. So I have nothing to report. I can say with confidence I have nothing to report on him. He's 18 also, so just a year older than Barca's own Pau Prim, who is doing well at the Euro U17 right now. Sure. So I don't know where the club does see Pau Prim. Like, his body has to change a little bit, but it seems like Vermeeren was a regular rotation piece for Royal Antwerp in the Belgian first division, starting about half their games. So you either get him for 10 million now or 7 million now, whatever Royal Antwerp are asking, or you probably can't afford him later after another cash-heavy club snatches him up. So if there are scouts at Barcelona that are really, really sold on this kid in 3 years' time and saying, this is our guy, are you willing? And I don't think Xavi and the board are you willing to invest in a project like him? Now, the only reason I would bring him up and potentially go for him for $7 million is that if you bring somebody like Oriol Romeu for $3 million in as well, and almost like you package it together, or maybe you bring in Vermeeren and then Amrabat you can get for $12 million. And you say, okay, we spent $25 million on two pivots, not either of them are the consummate starter, but we can survive this year because if we get the potential one right, that looks great, and Amrabat is serviceable enough for this season if De Jong isn't even an option, or if Nico doesn't return and he's not in the plans. Or to me, that would be the name. So I'm almost over this list here, then I'll throw it over to you. Neves, 26-year-old for Wolves. He's a Mendes client, of course. So that when I say Mendes, I mean Laporta's choice. Sorry, Laporta slipped there. So I've seen plenty of him in the past. I've watched Wolves in the past, but I haven't seen much of them this season. I'll be honest about that. And Wolves' results have been mixed, and apparently still has his performances. Apparently he has not really excited people, including Wolves fans. So for 45 million euros, I'm not entirely sold on the idea of Ruben Neves, but Barca may also not have any other options. So I think you're going to continue to have him be named until somebody is signed, because if Laporta wants him, if they want to get a deal done, if they want to swap out another player with him to try to lower that number, and they want to make this happen, as in like the Laporta and some of the people on his board, then they're going to make it happen. Like, that's what happens when the president picks players. And then Amrabat, in a similar light, Fiorentina fans have not been sold on his performances this year outside of the World Cup, which everybody got to watch. So everyone has their scouting report from the World Cup. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because with Amrabat, I do oscillate between thinking that because he was already almost over the line in January, that means that he would most likely find his way to Barca in the summer. But then the other names are immediately linked to Barcelona. And then I say, well, if Barcelona are going to get anybody else, I think they're going to try for everybody else, basically. You know what I mean? Like, Amrabat is not their first, second, third, fourth, fifth choice as a player. But as far as the transfer, he's the first choice because he's the one who keeps saying yes, is willing to push for that move to make sure he can agree to it, and he's willing to come on reasonable wages. So his willingness to come, I think, again, because Zubimendi is saying no and other players might be too expensive, because of his willingness to come, that might, you know what I mean?
He might be the most valuable player on that list, from a Barca perspective.
It might be 2 a.m. at the Catalan bar, and then
I was just going to say.
Okay, so four more names. N'Golo Kanté offered to Barcelona as he's becoming a free agent, 32-year-old free agent. He played 9 games this season. So whatever IQ you have of, 32 or 33-year-old N'Golo Kanté in your head? Well, 32-year-old. Whatever idea you have of Kanté in your head, he played 9 games a season. So
It's not the dude from Leicester or...
Probably not.
Or you know, peak Chelsea years.
Yeah, and the reason I go back to Oriol Romeu, I already mentioned him, offered to Barcelona from Girona. He has a contract till 2025, but being that he'll be 32 next season, that buyout should be rather simple to get done. He just arrived this season, by the way, from Southampton. And I did watch enough Girona this season to tell you that I think he would definitely survive in the Liga as their pivot in the Liga. I think that okay. is of that level. And of all these options, as I said, I actually think he would fit best next to De Jong in that box four midfield or as a double pivot. So whatever you want to call it, I think he was sturdy. He was calm. He was precise.
That's what you mean.
And why, again, I would push for Oral Romeo, just a bit of what I've seen, is that he allowed Elis Garcia the freedom that De Jong needs. So Elis Garcia was one of the best players in the Liga this entire season due to the fact that Oral Romeo was that force behind him, not even a destroyer type, but that pivot behind him, being that player that you needed to support him. So I think if you want to see the best version of De Jong next season as well, I would be confident in Oral Romeo, at least in the Liga, helping you do that. Does that player help you win the Champions League? Absolutely not. No way does Oral Romeo raise your ceiling in every way. But if you're afraid that you're not going to get anybody else again with those musical chairs, I think that he has a high enough floor. And
I was going to say, I think he's a little bit more of a floor raiser or, you know, floor solidifier than any kind of, you're not worried about his ceiling.
Yep. Okay. So just a few more names here. It appears that I'm almost done here. It appears that Mauricio Diaz, who we spoke about before, the teenager from Uruguay, he's not seen as a first team option for next season. But as I said before, he's not really a pivot either. He's more of a box to box player that is comfortable in deeper position. So yeah, I think that it's still, he is one for the future. So we're not throwing his name for next year. And then I do wonder where Nico Gonzalez will fit into the plans, but I think he fits in as Kessie's replacement if Barca chooses to cash in on Kessie this summer. Nico's salary is a whole lot cheaper than Kessie's, and I can see Barca having promised that kind of move in their viability plan. So the only way I think Nico, again, sticks around is not as a pivot. Like, I mean, I think it would make sense where instead of having Eric Garcia change to being a pivot, that you say, Nico, we're going to give you as many opportunities as possible to have you play it in double pivot.
Yes.
But you're also the backup the minute we can afford someone like Zubimendi or somebody else.
Right, that's the thing. Yeah.
From a roster sense, again, I expect him to actually probably be loaned or sold again if Kessie plays. And if Kessie is gone, then he just kind of takes that roster spot and doesn't take over the pivot spot, if you will. Right. And then the last two names, as I expected, I was right about this, but it's easy to be right about this kind of stuff. Joshua Kimmich wasn't a real possibility, and I know everybody has their favorites, but Sporting CP's Manuel Ugarte is being looked at as an option instead of Ugarte is either PSG or EPL bound. So it sounds like, I know people like Ugarte, but so does PSG and EPL teams who can pay 10 times the salary or whatever, five times the salary that Barcelona can.
They can afford higher fees and higher wages.
Yeah, so I think that's why you're not seeing Ugarte at all, because he is going to make more money and break Barcelona's salary structure. So they have already disqualified that name and they don't need to announce that they think he's a good pivot, because it seems like he's a good player and everybody knows that now the secret's out of the bag. So those are all your picks, Emil. So give me, as we round down the show, give me some thoughts, give me the players. I mean, I'm not telling you to rank them, but yeah, give me some of your feelings about who you've seen and what players would excite you and which ones wouldn't.
So, I mean, of the players that we talked about, the two, I mean, I guess to me, the two best known are Joshua Kimmich and Zubimendi. Both are excellent players. Both are not coming. So, I mean, in a sense, like Joshua Kimmich would be, he'd be the dream. I mean, of course he would, but I never put any weight in the Kimmich rumors, and, you know, Zubimendi doesn't want to come. And
yeah, I mean, but I would go zero on Kimmich and 20% on Zubimendi. I would take that liberty.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I guess the way that I'm thinking about it is, it's his boyhood club. They're in the Champions League in the group stage, and presumably they want to put in a respectable showing in the Champions League. So I could see them, look, a year from now, his value is not going to be dramatically diminished. So, you know, maybe you keep him at least one more year. Try to do something in the Champions League and then move on from him. But either way, I mean, I don't foresee him showing up here. I mean, I think you start having to get into sort of how functional, you know, a functional style of player. I mean, I think that's where Romeo's an interesting call, because you're not going to replace Busquets. Like, you don't have someone who has the Barcelona style of playing that position ingrained in his brain, ready to go. So for that reason, I mean, I think you take the floor raiser or floor solidifier in Romeo, and maybe you take a flyer on one of the teenagers, and, you know, hopefully you unearth something, you know, a couple of years down. But in the meantime, Romeo can serve just as a functional, reasonably competent space filler at that position until you find a longer term solution.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's why I'm not like going crazy and be like, oh, if they don't, if they miss out on whatever, maybe it's the end of the world. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that I'm almost saying that he feels to me to be, especially if you're, again, bringing in Ramirez, where it is a lesser of two evils to basically say, all right, we're actually going to take two stabs at this, where we know what Oral Romeo is giving us. And he's, again, not helping us win the Champions League. But then you do ask yourself about the project. Like, that is the risk that if you bring in an Amrabat, then you're bringing in Amrabat to be your starter. You're bringing in Amrabat to help you win a Champions League, right? You're bringing in Ruben Neves to help you win a Champions League. And so that's, again, the argument I'm making, that I don't think Neves or Amrabat help you win a Champions League as much as again, if you're taking a flyer on Vermeerian for the next 3 years. Like, does that player at 22 help you? I mean, if you really believe in his potential, does that player at 22 for 8 million euros now, or 7 million euros or 10, whatever it is, does that player in 3 years help you win a Champions League more likely than Neves and Amrabat? And my answer...
Yeah, Neves for 45 million, 100% yes.
Well, maybe. I mean, we don't know, like, is it again, the kid's 18 years old. Like, you don't know
He's going to... I mean, I guess more so than I'm saying is the notion of placing that 8 million euro wager on this particular transfer feels much more prudent than whatever...
45 for Neves, for example.
Yeah, exactly. The best and the worst thing about Ruben Neves is that we know what he is. We know what player he is. At least you can dream on the teenagers, you know, and just, you know, you might unearth a superstar or something like that. Whereas if you pay 45 million for Ruben Neves, you're paying full price for something that's functional, fine, but nothing special.
Yeah. And I think there's a world too, like this is a weird world where it feels like Barcelona can get, say, business done up front and enough business done up front. Like, if they are choosing to sell Abde, there are suitors for Abde. There are plenty of suitors. Like, Osasuna would love to have him back.
Yep.
Like, they're going to suffer without him next season. They would love to have him back, but a club is likely going to pay more for him. Yep. So if they want to ship him, they're going to be able to ship him pretty early. It seems like Lenglet, instead of trying to find a club, if Tottenham want him, they can basically not give him away, but there's a price for him. Tottenham can pay it, and they're done with that. Yep. Umtiti, it went from zero suitors for 2 years. Now there will be some suitors.
Yep.
Where Barcelona can eat some of his final bit of wages. And again, remember,
he's going into the final year of his contract, right?
Right. Well, remember, he extended so that he could lower wages to help him facilitate a loan move.
Yeah.
And he did that, and he helped the club out. So thank you to him. And now you can find him a new place to be. And again, this nightmare that he's had for the last few seasons can finally be over. And I have some confidence in a way that I didn't even last year. I know all those levers were pulled and all these players came, but I actually have more confidence in getting that other business done by getting rid of, again, like finding a market for X player that they want to get rid of and getting them out pretty early, where you might have the ability, that being Barcelona, to, especially with Alba, his contract going off the books, and you have a one-to-one. I'm being overly optimistic, but people know money-wise, I'm generally pretty pessimistic, right? Like, I'm pretty honest about it. And so there is this world, though, just doing the math, that Barcelona can get to the 1v1 rather early and by selling enough players very quickly and just getting done with, again, Lenglet, business they have to do, they're getting that business done rather quickly. There is this world where the club can come in, can buy, we'll say, three players they're very excited about and three players they feel like they have to get to fill needs. Like, there is a world where Barcelona do have five or six players coming in. Whether Messi is or not is not the point. He would obviously be the headline for all the other reasons. But in truth, you could bring in five players that could be exciting. In the same way that last summer, I mean, they brought in Marcus Alonso, but they also did bring in Koundé and Lewandowski, and they brought in Pablo Torre as a young player for this year. So there was a number of players who arrived to the club that you could be excited about. And even Anders Christensen. Now, we weren't excited about him then, but it's certainly...
No. He was one of the most underrated, or kind of one of the unsung heroes of the season.
Yep.
And so, I mean, those players are out there. And look, there is something really instructive about this in that, look, I'm not saying you're always going to be able to get, you know, a veteran on a free transfer who, you know, the change of scenery allows him to contribute to you right away and you get incredible value for money. But a little bit, I'm thinking that it's not a bad thing to actually try, you know what I mean? To get, you know, flyers on veterans like that, because also every time you hit on a deal like that, it frees up more of your budget to take home run swings and, you know, to try to bring in superstars. I would like to see two or three players sort of in that, an attempt to replicate the Christensen success of where you just really do go shop in the bargain bin and you find just capable, solid professionals who maybe their old club and just the market in general is, you know, extremely low on, and try to play for a bounce back, you know, here or there. And
well, the only argument of that is that for every Andres Christensen, there's a Marcus Alonso. That's the argument that like they can't.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, I guess the thing is there's a reason these players are cheap or free, you know, but it's like the NFL thing when they say like, you know, the quarterback on a rookie deal is the most valuable thing. I think if you're able to get kind of rock solid, reliable play for relatively pennies or dimes on the dollar, in building a top level football team, I think that's probably the most valuable type of contract or, you know, valuable kind of category of player. Someone who is, you know, experienced and, you know, just regular, you know, steady and competent, but not highly valued by the market, because that just allows you so much more dry powder to go and try to,
yeah,
you know, short up the rest of the roster.
Yeah, and I'll say that if Barcelona are going to get back to the 1-to-1, if you thought there were rumors and names thrown out over the last few seasons, you just wait, because if Barcelona are back to 1-to-1, the hurricane of transfer news. So anyway, well, I plan on covering all that stuff, and hopefully the Mallorca game, goodbye to Busquets, goodbye to Alba, and, you know, who cares if there's a mystery third player or not. It's kind of saying goodbye to, I say club legends in full voice about Alba. So, again, if you like this show, if you follow us on YouTube or TikTok or Twitter or Facebook, wherever you find us, Patreon's a big help as well. We always appreciate it. Thanks so much for listening to the show. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. Fourth part.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.